Thank you so much, Wayne. About 5 years ago, in a matter of 4 months, three members of my freed family died. First, it was my dad, then my uncle, and then my cousin's husband. Then, less than 3 years ago, eight members of our Landis family died. So to say the least, losing 11 family members in 5 years, I think, does not make one knowledgeable about dying. In fact, I know it doesn't. But I accepted Wayne's call, and I trust that you can receive a little bit of whatever it is that you might need this morning, whatever might be helpful to you. So I share a bit of my experience. Did you notice that at the beginning I referred to these family members as they died, not passed on, not sleeping, or any other phrase that people sometimes use? They died. No longer breathing. Their life on this earth ended. Dead. Sounds harsh, even to my own ears, but I choose to think of it as a transition. It's a transition for everyone involved. The deceased as transitioning from this life of toil to a life of eternal joy. Transition. And for us who live, it's a transition of letting go. It's the letting go of the empty chair at family get-togethers. It's the letting go of not seeing our loved ones sitting in the church pew. This transition and this letting go is as varied as there are people. But eventually we do adjust. We mourn, the pain lessens over time. But some of the letting go never quite lets go. It's those things that make that person special. It's what made them who they are. Things that they taught me and which are now a part of me. I am who I am because of who they were. Most times. Sometimes I think that perhaps I did not spend as much time with my family as might have been ideal, but I cannot spend too much time thinking about that. My dad would say, "It's over and done. You have to move on." But I say reflection is part of the transition and part of the letting go. So I think it's all right to reflect. Now, also, in the case of my dad and his brother, a spirit of playfulness and fun was who they were. That trait goes further back in the ancestry, as my grandfather's brother was a lot of fun. He always had sort of something funny to put in there. So the other trait that is evident in the generations, past, present, and future, I can see it in my grandchildren as they grow and mature into young people, is that trait of working hard. They all worked hard. They all work hard. And I often remember a quote. It went like this: if you're going to do a job, do it right. Now, obviously, I knew the Landis family members less time. And as I reflected on each of their lives, the same two things apply: transition and letting go. So as I reflected on the lives of the eight Landis family members who have recently died, Sincerity is the word that comes to mind. Henry, Raymond, and Russ, all brothers of Ken, as well as his nephew, Larry, they were all very sincere people. They did not use words or language that wasn't genuinely from the heart. So if you've been counting, that's only four members. Four women also died. Doris, Henry's wife, Bev, their daughter-in-law, Lorraine, Ken's niece, and Frances, Ken's sister-in-law, all died in 2018 and 2019. They also were very sincere in their words. They lived graciously and they died graciously. They let go of their physical abilities and allowed others to walk beside them. And I appreciated that from each one of them. Now I want to share a little bit about Russ, Ken's brother. It took Russ a little longer, a little while, to allow others to walk beside him. But 2 weeks before he died, in March of this year, he was able to let his sister and his brother, Ken, to stand at his bedside. Even though he chose not to speak about the pain from fragmented relationships, his words were few, and yet he was always appreciative for their presence. So Jesus shows up. He was then able to receive God's love through a visit from my dad's brother, Ralph. Now, Ralph came to see him twice, and the second time was 24 hours before he died. And you see, Ralph and Russ were childhood buddies. And at this time, they had not seen each other for years. Ralph's visit did what others could not do. So Ralph asked Russ if he could pray the sinner's prayer with him. So unable to speak, Russ nodded. Ralph prayed. Russ nodded again, and he took Ralph's face into his hands, and he nodded again, and the tears were just flowing down his face. He died the next day. I choose to believe that Russ is rejoicing in heaven, because I believe that Jesus showed up, Jesus invited himself there, and I believe that is what faith is. Faith that God is who he says he is and does what he promises. He is always with us, no matter what transitions we need to go through.
When Wayne sent out the invitation for me to be part of this service of remembering and sharing around someone who was significant in my own faith journey, well, a whole community of persons came to mind. How do I choose? Of course, the obvious, my dad, or grandparents who were significant, or other relatives, or persons who I served alongside of, Richard Detweiler, Sylvia and Wally Jantz, and that list goes on. And I thought about persons from my youth at Spring Mount Mennonite Church, one in particular, Harold Nice, who was quite influential in my early years, those teen years. Or, most recently, my good friend Marilyn Nolt. Indeed, it has taken a village and continues to take a village to help me along on my faith journey. So I thank you for your part. But today I'd like to focus just a few moments around a former pastor of mine, of my young adult years, John R. Smucker. Not John I. Smucker, as he was always quick to say. John I. was a well-known pastor in New York City, but John R. came from the Midwest, a director at Camp Amigo for a time, pastor in several congregations in Indiana. John came to Spring Mount Mennonite as the very first seminary-trained pastor. He followed long-term pastor Paul Ruth, who was a former pastor, had been called out of the Salford congregation to help plant the Spring Mount Church, and Paul was pastor of those years for many years. John, along with his spouse Donna, Donna was a teacher at Penview Christian School for those 9 years that they served at Spring Mount with their four kids, Beth, J.D., Emily, and their son Steve, who some of you would recall Steve and Judy being part of this congregation. Now, John was a part-time pastor, or should I say salaried part-time, in a primarily earthy, kind of blue-collar congregation, good folks. John would paint summers. In the winters, he would set up shop at Provident Bookstore. He did income tax work there. He also did some subbing at Dock, North Penn High School, and other odd jobs to kind of make ends meet. Looking back on those years, from where I sit now, John certainly gave much more time and energy to the congregation than he was ever should have. John had a very strong missional DNA in that day. John's way of doing things was that he would paint and connect with people in the community, and then he would say, hey, would you like a group of us to come into your home and get to know each other? Well, that worked for some folks, and one of the couples with John was Greg and Becky Long. Greg and Becky were newly married, and they were seekers, and they were at that point exploring the Church of Latter-day Saints. And through some involvement with Greg and Becky, we came, eight of us, to join in their home every other week, and it was a small group that was really meant to help to expose and kind of invite them into understanding and exploring Christianity and Christian faith. Ultimately, Greg and Becky became a very active part of the Spring Mount congregation. But I must confess that probably that small group had did much more for me than I've ever even imagined. It was there where John had a way of kind of encouraging all of us, and myself included, in kind of giving leadership to the group. Now, I was a young adult. I was probably in my late teens at that point, early 20s, and I began to lead this group. We used a study called The Edge of Adventure by Bruce Larson and Keith Miller. It was a kind of a study, kind of an earthy study that we went through, and it was fun exploring a variety of things. Well, in the context of that group study, tried to keep this short, I made the decision to do voluntary service. And it was a lot of John's nudging, as I recall, and kind of stepping out and stepping away from the business I was involved in at that point, and heading to California with Mennonite Board of Missions in a voluntary service assignment. When I returned, John pretty quickly got me plugged in, and I became a member of church council, did some other things at Spring Mount in that congregation. John also kind of, unbeknownst to me, placed my name with Franconia Conference, and I became part of the Nurture Commission. I'm not sure if Danella was chairing that group at that time. As I recall, she might have been, but I was exposed to conference work at that point. Well, John kept kind of nudging and prodding me to exploring college and ministry and what that might mean for my life. And he kind of kept pushing at me. And he recognized perhaps some gifts in this very insecure person that I didn't always recognize myself. Well, John left the congregation, he and his family. I made my way to Heston College, and you know the rest of the story through a series of events. Indeed, life did move on for John. He had a rather difficult ending at Spring Mount. He went on to pastor in Ohio, and then to Iowa, and then ultimately back to Goshen, Indiana, where he resumed a painting business and passed away a few years ago. What was welcomed in my life, encouragement, nudging by John, and perhaps a bit of pushiness, to be honest, when I really needed to be pushed and prodded, well, that wasn't always valued by others. Perhaps an imperfect saint, pastoring an imperfect congregation, but looking back, it really was a threshold moment in my life, and I thank John R. Smucker.